Hi there. I'm Juliet Nichols, the founder and director of Pineapple Audio Production, and you're listening to the Podcasting Playbook. We're really lucky to be supported by some incredible businesses at Pineapple, so I just want to take a minute here to thank House of Kalmar, a self-care brand all about empowering you to reconnect with yourself. I tried their Love Bath Oil recently, and it is beautiful. We're also working on a podcast for them, so watch this space. And Audio Boom, one of the leading podcast publishers who help you get your podcast to Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you listen to podcasts. We use them for tons of our content distribution, so thank you very much. We are huge, huge fans. On today's episode, we are so excited to have Nathan McGurr with us. Nathan is the founder of The Study Buddy, a tool to help students manage their time, especially in the run-up to exams. He's also a self-confessed marketing geek and has a ton of knowledge in the digital and social media spaces. He also hosts the Study Sessions podcast, which we've been producing together for a couple of years now. Hi, Nathan. So would you like to tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get on to today's topics?
Firstly, thanks for having me on. It's fabulous to talk to you, Julia, as always. So hi, as you say, I'm Nathan. I am the founder and director of The Study Buddy, which is a business that helps to take some of the stress out of exam preparation, specifically for GCSEs. And that comes because, although I led with founder and director, I am first and foremost a dad, like a normal human being. And it was bringing some of those experiences to bear that really helped me to set up The Study Buddy. So I guess that's really what I should have led with. Dad and a human first.
So we know that you're doing The Study Buddy now. We put together the Study Sessions podcast a couple of years ago, which is amazing to work on with you. And we can talk about that a little bit later. But this isn't what you've always done, is it? You've only been running The Study Buddy for the last 4 or 5 years. So where did this all begin?
Oh, I don't know if anyone else can see the wavy lines as I go back into my dim and distant past. So yeah, as you say, the Study Buddy is relatively new. About 4 or 5 years, I guess. You know this better than I do. How embarrassing is that?
I know that because we started our businesses at a similar sort of time.
Yes, we did. Absolutely.
But
before that, of course, we'd met before. So we'd met at Lloyd. So my background actually is in digital and in marketing, a splash of human-centered design, lots of nerdy stuff. But it wasn't what I expected. What I'd expected to do was go into law. So I actually did a law degree, but needed to pay rent. So once I'd left university and the need to pay rent, well, my wife went off and did her law degree. And frankly, she's so much better at it than I ever would have been. So I just found this job that would, as I say, just put money in the account so that it could fly out again just as quick. And from there, it was like a series of mistakes, I guess, or sort of happen chances that led me into what was at that time and sort of an emerging world of the internet. For those of you who remember, and it won't be you who remembers, Juliet, but FreeServe was just coming about, unplugging fax machines to put in modems. So this was like a whole new, brave and exciting world that I wanted to get into. New media, actually, as we called it back then. And it just sort of went from there that I worked on websites, did a bit of advertising, a bit of marketing, was lucky enough to be made redundant, which is kind of sound like an odd thing to say, which then led to starting up my own business. Although it's been a career that's been all around marketing and meeting needs and doing sort of exciting stuff like that, it's none of it's really been deeply considered. Right up until Study Buddy, actually.
I love that. I love that idea that everything happens just by chance, Nathan, but I can't believe that's all true. Let's talk about a couple of things that you mentioned there. The first one that really stood out to me was human-centered design. Tell me more.
So human-centered design is fascinating. And actually, I almost resisted the idea of going into it. So one of my most recent tours in corporate land was working for Lloyds Bank. One of the things that they're very good at is thinking about the customers and the way that they interact with the customers. My job at this particular time was in digital transformation, so banks becoming more digital, branches losing their place in the high street. And one of the strands of work was very much about how do our more vulnerable customers interact with the bank and how can we make those experiences better for them? And genuinely like wanting to do the right thing, which sort of jars a bit with our perception of what banks are really like. But the idea of a human-centered design is that you start with the problem that or the opportunity that actually exists, rather than finding a solution, which is what a lot of us tend to do, and then retrofit it to what we think it could solve. And so you really do place the human, the customer at the heart of everything that you do, which is, it's such an interesting way of looking at things. And I think actually it's something that a lot more businesses would probably say, actually, I didn't know that I did that already, but might actually benefit from sort of more of a structure around it. I feel quite evangelical actually about the whole thing. I think it's a great way of solving problems, which really and truthfully is what my entire career has been about.
You're a very positive problem solving solutions type guy from what I know of you, Nathan, definitely. And you've been massively positive for me since we met, which was, I believe I was on some sort of internship or work experience at Lloyd's, and you took me under your wing massively and got me involved in some awards. I don't know if you remember that. It was quite some time ago now.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I should apologize if actually I was taking you under my wing.
I
tended not to be trusted with other people quite so much. And I think it's because my outlook is a little different. I'd like to think that I'm wired oddly in a quirky way, but that's what makes it. I think you need different people in different types of roles, and you need good, solid people that you can depend on, that can take you from A through the followed steps of B and C, and you'll end up quite rightly at D. I'm just not one of those persons that does that. So I'd challenge firstly whether or not we really need to be at D, and what the hell are we starting at A for when C seems, and so because I think I approach things differently, it tends to work out quite well. So long as you're surrounded by, as I say, those reliable people. But that award scheme, as you say, is really interesting, because that was such a great piece of work to be involved in. Talking to so many inspirational entrepreneurs, which is what that award scheme was for. It was business startups and young enterprises, specifically for founders who'd come out of university.
Isn't it a funny thing now that we met, you know, you got me involved a little bit in that project, and now we're both sat here as founders of our own businesses?
Absolutely. I think so. And I think something about those, that founders can be infectious, that there's an enthusiasm that people get when they're running their own business. And I've definitely seen it in you, and I see it in other people as well, that if you get excited, because actually if you're not excited, you shouldn't be starting your own business, or you've ended up there probably for the wrong reasons. And when you see that glint, that spark in someone's eye, and you think, actually, do you know what? I want a glint like that. That's I want to look in the mirror and see that level of excitement, even if that excitement is tinged with utter exhaustion because you've also been doing your social media posts and your accounts at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yes, very true. Without that excitement, the motivation will not come, will it? So that is very, very important. I agree. Now, one of the other things I was going to ask you about, Nathan, is challenges that you've come across. But hearing you talk about the redundancy that you had as a positive, it reminds me that I feel you are the person who does find a positive spin on pretty much everything. Tell me about the redundancy, and if you don't mind, indulge me if there are other challenges that you've come across similarly that you've managed to spin.
No, of course. And actually, it's funny because my wife and I joke about this, that when we met, I'm very much a glass half full. She is probably veering more onto a glass half empty. And I think that's why we've been so successfully and happily married for 24 years. We're sort of this yin and yang. Over time, I've become not just a glass half full, but she's accused me of being a glass nearly overflowing kind of a person, that I'm sort of almost exuberantly enthusiastic about things. But about the redundancy, so at the time it didn't feel like a positive. It was an awful lot of stress, and I really don't mind sharing it at all. The situation was that I was a new dad. My son was going to a nursery, and my wife, as I said, as a solicitor, and she just happened to be working away. We co-parent a lot. So even back then, and I say back then, it was 20 years ago, that was quite unusual, I think, for dads to take such an active role. But it was my night to pick up my son from nursery. The manager that I worked for held a meeting and it went on. And I just said, look, I've got to go. I've got to pick up my son. There's nothing I can do about this. Anyway, he wasn't happy. And that began the sort of decline in our relationship, to the point where he was daft enough to tell an ex-law student You're just not the brand manager I need because of your parenting responsibilities.
Oh dear, oh dear.
It's sex discrimination. People don't see that on a male. It just doesn't seem like it fits. But actually, it was.
Absolutely, yeah.
My parenting responsibilities. And what was really painful was I'm a up and coming corporate type, toeing the line, really wanting to get ahead. But then this really jarred. And I thought, well, there's nothing I can do about it. And I am, well, as I said in my intro, actually, I feel like I'm a dad and a person first and foremost. So it really did jar. Anyway, working in the brand area at that time, the irony wasn't lost. And so I just sort of bided my time. I knew that he'd need to get rid of me as we were batting backwards and forwards with paperwork over what was said and what wasn't said. And eventually he called a meeting. I was unfortunately displaced, which is to say my job was no longer needed. It was entirely regrettable and so on and so forth. I mean, this was telegraphed. I knew this was coming. So I'd had 3 months to plan around it. HR could do nothing about it really once they knew the full story. So I had gardening leave for months and months and months. Fantastic.
Yeah.
But I think that, it was an absolute watershed moment for me, not just because actually there was a bag of cash so I could reevaluate where my career was going to go next and had the opportunity to start up my first business, but actually the watershed moment came when I'd come home having had that meeting about being made redundant. I walked through the door and my little son, he was at the time, not so little now, I can tell you, came running down the hallway and went, "Daddy, Daddy, you're home. You're never home during the day." And he jumped up and gave me a hug. And I mean, even now I can feel the hairs on the back of my neck standing up because I couldn't remember the last time I'd felt that sort of good.
Well,
I've got them as well. And I thought, actually, I'm never doing that again. I'm never going to be in a position where my work is dictating how I live, because that is not what it is about for me. I do not live to work. It's very much working to live. And some people aren't like that. Some people the other way around. And that's fine. I'm not dictating anyone else. But for me, it was really clear I had got that balance wrong and I needed to reevaluate. So at the time, I mean, that was definitely a challenge. It'd been made redundant. It was in the I think probably one of the first of those downturns. I wasn't sure. But you make of it what you will. Not quite as cliche as if life gives you lemons, pour yourself a gin and tonic. But it's that good, very much that kind of thing. Like, actually, you are where you are. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah. I heard somebody say recently, the mark of success is what you do with the ingredients, not the ingredients that you're given, something like that.
Yeah, why not? I think that makes sense. Because we've all come from different positions. The different events will happen to us along the way. Some people are very happy to turn up, do a job, go home, and why not? I think that's fine. And other people aren't. I mean, we've got different opportunities, we've got different outlooks. And as you say, that sort of combination of individual approach and what you do with the ingredients, as you so eloquently put it, I think is exactly right.
So how did you get from that moment then to the study buddy?
My son was my muse, yet again, it would appear. I'm hoping he won't listen to this because he'll think he'll become really even more egocentric than he is at the moment. But the study buddy was born out of necessity, I think, as most good inventions are. And so it must have been now 6 years ago. He was doing his GCSEs and love him. He's a chip off the old block. So he's lazy and cocky. And he wasn't doing anything to study for his exams, which in itself wouldn't have been a problem. I'm a relaxed person, make your own way. But the issue for Jake in particular was that he wanted to be a quantum physicist or a brain surgeon or something really lofty. So this combination of being as laissez-faire about things as I am, but as ambitious as his mum is, wasn't going to work. And I could see that he was sort of destined to end up in a place that wasn't healthy from a sort of anxiety and stress and well-being, because he just wouldn't be fulfilling his own ambitions. And so I wanted to help. And that's the sort of looking back, rose-tinted view of how things were at the time, because it sounds very calm and considered. Whereas in actual fact, the way that really played out was a lot of screaming and shouting from me as I'm trying to get this lazy little sod to do anything to stop himself from messing up his opportunities. And so we did that. And a lot of parents go through that with procrastinating teens in particular. What I was faced with ultimately was just a problem. And I'm no stranger with dealing with sort of problems in a corporate life. And so that's what I did. I sort of took him out of the equation as a personality and just said, well, what do I need to know for him? What does he need to know? And how can I help? And it just boiled down to two really basic questions. How much work have you got to do, and when are you going to fit it in? Well, having seen it, that problem like that, I could then create an approach based on the project management and human-centered design and all these other things that I mentioned before, sort of all came together in this perfect boiling pot. I created a project approach to his revision, and it worked really well for him and for me. Can't take out the stress that there was in the household as well. He just got on with it. I mean, Sunday we sat down and we planned out using this sort of approach. Monday, everything was well with the world. It was actually quite incredible. And a few of our friends had then spotted it and said, I don't know what you've done, but I want some of that. I said, oh, actually, it was fairly straightforward. It was really easy. It was like this. We did this. I did something else. I knew that my time in corporate land was going to come to a close because it just wasn't comfortable. I'd gone back to working for bank at that point. And so I thought, well, do you know what? I can do this. I really want to help other people. I've got an approach and a methodology that's going to help students to de-stress, to overcome anxiety for those who are overzealous, get their asses into gear, frankly, for those who are procrastinators. It worked for any number of different types of students. So I wanted to get it out there. I wanted to sort of spread the word, tell as many people as I can. And so then that was then the Study Buddy was born, just out of sort of this absolute desire to help as many students as I can fulfill their potential.
I love that. And 4 years later, 4 or 5 years later, here we are, and it's still going and it's growing and there's new things happening all the time, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's still plugging away. And I think that's the exciting bit. And actually, unusually for me, I'm determined to be uncharacteristically focused. Whereas I have weaknesses for like startups. I love thinking about other people's challenges and opportunities. So I still do that as much as I can, but I'm trying not to spin up ideas. So I think I've got something like 180, 190 web domains.
Oh, wow.
Which all represent genius ideas.
Obviously.
At one stage or another. Obviously, right? And some of them not necessarily so brilliant, although I'd still love to do them. Things like Fesspit, which was my online confessional for the time-pressured sinner. So things like this. But as I say, the last 4 years have very much been nurturing the Study Buddy as something that can last as a sort of with a bit of a legacy. And as I say, just really getting out there. Obviously, that has been that's been challenging as well over the last few years.
Ups and downs, always with businesses, of course. But it's amazing to see your enthusiasm and your motivation and your real passion for Study Buddy and what you do with it. And of course, a couple of years probably into your business, maybe 2.5, 3 years ago now, you and I ended up speaking again. And this time it was about podcasting. But tell me how you found yourself getting interested in podcasting or in audio, because you haven't mentioned it up until this point. So I presume it was something that was relatively new to you at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I hadn't even considered it. I'm a big music fan. So I listen constantly in the office, on the shop floor. There's music piped through. I've always got at least one set of headphones so that I can listen in case one of them gets broken. So sound and audio, I think, was always really important to me, but I'd never considered podcasting until I saw something from you, either a post perhaps on Instagram or Facebook or maybe even LinkedIn. There was something that made the connection between you and podcasting. And I thought, actually, that could be really interesting for the Study Buddy. And so I did a bit of digging around. And I think it became at a point when I was looking at marketing. So this was pre-pandemic. So it would have been 2019, I guess. But yeah, so there was something there. And I think I then just dropped you an email and said, look, hi, not sure if you remember me as someone who ruined your opportunities at Lloyds. but I'm really interested in finding out a bit more. And talk me through what we could do. And so you did. And that was, that was a real eureka moment, I think, actually, because I was struggling. I was trying to find new ways of breaking through. Study Buddy, still very new and unknown brand. And so I was looking for something that would be a bit more exciting and sort of tick some boxes. And I don't mean that in a functory way. I mean, literally, there were things that I needed my marketing to do. So I needed reach and needed to get out to a broader audience than I was currently getting to. wanted to find that information. I wanted to be relevant, and also wanted to sort of cement the brand as one that cared about student well-being and student potential. We're not a business that's in here for getting your child to nines and eights. We're not a tutor service. So it's very much about the individual, and that's what the podcasting did.
Yeah. So we launched the trailer of the study sessions in March 2020. So it literally was just before the pandemic. So, I mean, crazy, crazy times. But tell me a little bit about that experience of us getting started, because yeah, we did have some ups and downs and in that initial period, didn't we?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to start with, I mean, it was really exciting because it was all very new. Personally, I was as nervous as hell. Like anyone who's never done this kind of stuff before hates the sound of their own voice. And I was absolutely in that camp. The voice in my head did not sound like the voice that was leaving my mouth. And I think that disconnect is what makes people think, oh, I'm not sure about that.
I think that's pretty normal as well, actually.
Absolutely. So there was definitely discomfort as we approached it, but also exciting because it was something new, and who doesn't love something new? And those first, I remember that you'd booked studio room. So we went up to a proper booth, and we had four guests lined up.
We did a block of recordings, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Which was fantastic. And again, from a business point of view and a marketing point of view, we could slow release those, and it took a lot of pressure off. And we knew that we had a pipeline of episodes to release. Of course, our first one, Dr. Dominique Thompson, who I love. I mean, we've had some amazing guests, but actually she's been tremendous, and always enjoyed chatting to her and learned so much. And I think that was the real watershed moment. Again, as part of that process, chatting to Dom, and I read her book before we sat down to do sort of a bit of research so that I knew wasn't just going in there and tell me stuff. I wanted it to be useful, but actually just gleaned so much information. And you think, I recognize the student you're talking about. Actually, not as Jake, but my niece is like that. I know someone else who's a bit like this, as she was talking about sort of anxiety around perfectionism, fear of failure. And actually that was when I knew that what we talked about and what we'd created together and sort of in this outline was really hitting on something, and I think was going to be so much bigger than I'd expected.
And we had Jake on an episode as well, didn't we, actually?
Yes, we did. And he was great. I was really nervous about that one. But I liked that. I really enjoyed that because I think we had good interplay between us, and it was very natural, although it was an unnatural situation because we were mic'd up and earphones on and sat opposite each other in this radio studio. Actually, it played out very well, I think. And he was very honest, as he tends to be. And I was as honest as I could be without using expletives, which was for him, because I wouldn't do it in front of him, not because I wouldn't do it in front of an audience.
Obviously. Our work together and the study sessions is actually a really great case study for how podcasting developed in quite a short time, because exactly that. We were in a studio, we met in real life, we had our guests come in one by one, and then, you know, within a month or a couple of months, we'd completely changed the way that we recorded, hadn't we?
Absolutely. I think actually it is just as well that we did have that block, because it took us a little while to try to evaluate what was going to go on with the podcast, how we're going to do it. Because I'm not even sure we'd released our first one before lockdown came in. We may have done. We may have just had episode one, perhaps episode two, and then lockdown. For me, obviously lockdown was hugely impactful as a business because it cancelled exams. We exist first and foremost in our customers' minds to help them with exam preparation. If you don't have exams, you don't need to revise. So I mean, how we got on with the business of recording podcasts was an issue as well, because I mean, the idea would have been, I presume, that we'd have just carried on going to a studio. But actually, as you said, I mean, it evolved. I mean, I'm currently in my mobile studio that I've got set up in the office, because the first one that we recorded in lockdown was sat here in the office, which is a sort of a typical office space. It's not a lot of furniture in it. It was ever so echoey. So yeah, bought in from Amazon foamy type pads to try to deaden some sound. I'm sat on a bit of carpet, which I still do. And so I erect this setup around me whenever I do any recording. So it's been quite interesting. There was a bit of trial and error, and you and the other producers that we worked with from Pineapple, I mean, were so patient as I tried to get this right and get it set up. But it's so much more convenient now, because I'm based out in the sticks because I don't need to be in a city centre. So why do it? So what I've needed to have travelled, but also we've had guests from all over the world. I've spoken to a professor in Texas before he was going to the gym. And we wouldn't have been able to have these, sort of the calibre of guests that we'd have had on, I think, if we were trying to get them out and about to where I am, certainly. So it would have been a lot more travelling, which is obviously very disruptive.
Yeah, that is the really exciting thing, I think, about that development in podcasting. Before, you know, I really couldn't have imagined doing that. I think every now and again, we would record someone on Skype for a podcast that we made for Metro. But that all seemed very technical and very difficult. And it just seemed otherworldly. And then suddenly it became our reality and we had to adapt, didn't we? So it's been, it's been really exciting. And obviously, we've recorded 80 or 90 episodes of study sessions in the past few years, which is fantastic.
Crazy.
It is crazy. Mm. Who'd have thought from the beginning? And I know you have all kinds of ideas of podcasting and other things that you want to do. So I suppose we'll watch this space for what happens next.
Absolutely. And you will be the first, because I wouldn't even dream of doing anything without you. I think that's the thing for me is that the podcasting has been such a great vehicle. And as I said, initially what I wanted was a marketing tool that would give me reach. And it has done that. And I think, although we are obviously a fairly niche subject, we got to number 4 in the iTunes charts at the very beginning, which is, I mean, amazing. And a great, from a marketing point of view, is a great thing to go out there and say. So we did do that. We had the reach. We could see the traffic and it translating to people coming to the website to find out more. People dropping me a line, say, oh, I love the podcast episode that I've just heard about this. And our guests benefited as well, I know, that they were saying, oh, people heard the podcast and then they'd come to me, which was all amazing. One of the greatest things, though, about the podcast has been just how much I've learned and the network that I've made as a result of it. And I didn't go into it with that cynical idea of, oh, this will be a great networking tool. Talking to teachers, talking to other educators around the world, cognitive scientists, I've learned so much. Because ultimately, I guess I'm sort of my intended listener. My daughter was going through GCSEs over the last couple of years, so it's been really quite selfish. Tell me about how I can help her in the guise of telling other parents how they can support their own teens. But that bank of knowledge, honestly, has absolutely changed the way, not just that I helped, that I was with them, the way that the business is now structured, and there have been some changes to what we've done and the advice that we can give. So absolutely, I mean, we will carry on podcasting.
Just to wrap this up then, if you had to pass on one lesson to someone who wants to run their own business like you, do some of the many, many exciting things that you've done, or to podcast, what do you think that would be?
Oh,
big question.
A big question and lots of answers. And I'm not really good at sticking to rules. So I'm going to do my best to just pick one. Although I could definitely pick others. But I think in total, if there's anything that I've learned from my my journey to date, it's to not be rigid about that journey that you're on. And I think a lot of us can get preoccupied with, if I'm going to end up there, I need to take this particular path. And actually, life's just not like that. So I think personally, it's really important to know what's important to you, sort of your values, your passion, if you like, and doing whatever you need to get you to that. And it's not a tangible, it's not about wealth, it's not about fast cars or other. It's about the stuff that's going to make you happy, that you're going to look back on and go, actually, that was a life well lived. And I think once you know what that is, as I say, go wherever you're led in order to get there.
Nathan, you are the perfect role model for that as well, because, you know, you run this fantastic business. You've had the corporate career into building your own business, and you also take fantastic sabbaticals to travel the world. So I think you really, you know, you really do embody that. Thank you very, very much for being that role model and for being, really, because you're an inspiration to me in lots of ways and super supportive of me and of Pineapple. So I really, really appreciate it. And thank you for taking some time out today for being on the podcast.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Nathan, for being our guest on the Podcasting Playbook. And thank you for tuning in and getting to know a little bit more about the work that we do. Don't forget to follow and review for more podcast episodes coming your way soon. And before I go, I just want to take a minute here to let you know about something I'm really excited we're doing, the Pineapple Awards. We're all about investing in young people and supporting them as they get into the audio, podcasting and radio industries. So we've set up an annual opportunity to showcase the talent of young people. They'll get great prizes, real industry experience, and the chance to network with the biggest bosses of the industry. And there are three categories: Best Producer, Best Editor, and Best Creative Idea. The Pineapple Awards are supported by Leo Bites, Stella, House of Kalmar, Ice Cool Design, and Audio Boom. The closing date is February 28th, 2023, and all the details are on the Pineapple website, so get entering now.